In a world where politics is all about the fighting.
I watch a George Will or a Charles Krauthammer, and I watch them for years. They're losers. They're just losers.
Piers, you also have to... Have you ever fired a weapon?
So that young man should have shot those people.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if someone had...
WCHL cuts through to the heart of the matter. It's time for I'll Grant You That. Reasoned, calm, thoughtful, with your host, Berkeley Grimble.
Welcome to I'll Grant You That. This is your host, Berkeley Grimble. I'll Grant You That is a show about politics. We started I'll Grant You That about 9 months or so ago, and it was started out of my own personal frustration at the lack of opportunity to speak across the aisle, the lack of civic discourse that we have in our sort of current political situation. And it's been a lot of fun. I've talked to a lot of people with whom I disagreed on just about everything, and I've certainly learned a whole lot in the process, and we certainly need to continue that. But today I'm thrilled to have in the studio with me a man with whom I suspect probably outside of barbecue we disagree on very few things, Mr. Greg Meyer. Greg, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for being here, Berkeley. I hope we agree on barbecue.
Well, I don't eat much barbecue anymore, but Greg is, among other things, a state representative in Raleigh, representing the which district?
House District 50.
House District 50.
Durham and Orange Counties.
Durham and Orange County. And you are serving in your second term, is that correct?
I'll be going into my third term after this election, yep.
Right. And so, we're so thankful that people like you are willing to get up there and do this. But Greg put up a wonderful, wonderful piece on Facebook, a video, and basically spoke to his reaction to the election and his concerns and what his thoughts were about how to move forward, how those of us who basically are on the losing end and are still sort of figuring out how to react to it and how to move forward, sort of how to lick our wounds, heal ourselves, and carry on in what seems to be a sort of scary new world of politics in a country that we sort of don't recognize, or we didn't think we recognized. I mean, it was really kind of, I think, a punch to the gut for those of us who, particularly living in our little blue world that we live here in the Chapel Hill, sort of Durham area. But so that's why I asked Greg to come on the radio and kind of go over again the part of what you said, because it was so eloquent, and I thought, and very moving. So thank you for doing that. And so let's talk a little. So what give us some of your thoughts on how you processed this election?
Well, it was a punch in the gut to me too. And I had to admit, that I was wrong. That I didn't anticipate the election's results at the presidential level. I didn't anticipate the Republican support that would happen across North Carolina. And I'm glad that we have some significant Democratic victories here. I'm excited about Governor-elect Cooper. I'm really glad that Josh Stein won the Attorney General's race. I'm very happy that Mike Morgan won the Supreme Court's race. If I look through rose-colored glasses, I can see the Democrats will now hold 2 out of 3 branches of government in North Carolina. Unfortunately, in North Carolina, the legislature is by far the strongest branch of government, and we only picked up 1 seat in the House. The Senate lost 1 Democratic seat, so there's mixed results, and our state is still going to have very conservative political leadership out of the legislature. But thinking about what did we see in the presidential election and why was it so surprising to so many of us, there are 3 things that I talked about in the video and I continue to think about. The first is that I think Democrats have to recognize that we were disconnected from the sentiment that existed around economic disenfranchisement in rural America. And that's not the only thing that contributed to a Trump election, but it's one of the things that Democrats have not been very good at. We have people in our base, particularly in communities of color, who have been telling us for a long time that ladders of economic mobility are broken. And we haven't done enough to fix those ladders of economic mobility. And we've gotten to a place in American history where there are white working class voters, particularly in rural areas, who are acutely feeling the fact that those ladders of economic mobility are broken, that they are the first generation in many generations that isn't able to provide more for their children, than the generation before them. And that type of sentiment resulted in a change election that went the Republicans' way. So we have to think about that, about what's our policy response on that level. On a political side, I think we have to think about two other responses. The first is we have to be ready to organize. When you take a loss, and when particularly when it's a loss where you have real fears about the consequences of the election, what do we do in the United States when we are afraid of our government? We organize. And there's a long history of that here, and we need to think about the ways that we use civic organizations and civic participation to be able to provide a balance to an activist government that we may feel is likely to be threatening to people who are marginalized, vulnerable, or oppressed. And that this is a time for people to not just vent their frustrations on Facebook or sit on the sidelines, but to actually step up and get involved with the types of civic organizations that help stitch together our social fabric and give us the networks to be able to push back against government when necessary.
So what would be some examples of these kinds of organizations? I mean, say you're a run-of-the-mill liberal person and you vote and you read, but you've never really done anything sort of active. You've never ventured out into the world of political activism in some way or another. I mean, sort of, what's a baby step there?
I think that you have a choice. Basically, you can choose two different paths. One is to choose a partisan path. We have a political system that depends on party organizations. So you can get involved with your political party of choice and help that party to organize and work. You can do that by being a candidate or a volunteer or a party leader. There's a lot of different ways to get involved. Or you can do it through nonpartisan civic organizations. And in those organizations, you can kind of choose, do you want to be involved with an organization that does have a specific kind of political stance, one that clearly stands on a certain side of a broad variety of issues that might agree with your liberal viewpoint, for instance. So you might see that the NAACP has had a long history of organizing for things that you believe in, and they're going to need your help to be organizing over the next 4 years. So go get involved. Or you might choose something that is more of a nonpartisan unifying organization like the League of Women Voters, that does take some policy positions, but has a long history of including people from both political parties in the work that they do together. And I think that those organizations in particular have an important role to play when our country is so divided, because those organizations that have traditionally been able to cross the divides right now are one of our only hopes for being able to find common ground. And I do think that there's a need right now for both approaches, a common ground approach and a strict advocacy approach that tries to push back.
We take a short break here. This is Berkeley Grimble with I'll Grant You That. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. This is your host, Berkeley Grimble, here in the studio with State Representative Greg Meyer, talking about what to do next after this recent election. And we were talking at the break, before the break, about what we as citizens who would like to do something but perhaps have never done anything. And the core message would be just go find any organization to do something. And really, it's in the doing. I mean, if you want to start feeling better, I mean, and this is one thing that occurred to me years and years ago. I mean, if there's certain magic things you can do to help yourself. And if you're feeling bad, helping somebody else is a guarantee that you'll feel better. It's like the psychological human condition guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, so most humans build positive feelings based on connections with other humans. Whether you're an extrovert or an introvert depends on kind of how you approach that and the way you direct your energy. But very few of us find emotional healing by staying by ourselves for very long.
Right. Right. So yeah, getting out there, getting involved, I mean, if all of us who are feeling badly, if you could just give a few hours a week, 2 or 3 hours a week, I mean, you know, that would cumulatively be a gigantic thing.
Correct. So. It would. And it's not just about feeling better, but it's about being prepared for what comes next. Mm-hmm. From my political perspective, that means being prepared for the opportunities that we're going to have to stand up against a Trump government and, you know, being ready to mobilize and organize for that and getting ready for what the next election cycle.
Let me ask you a quick question. So for those, I mean, you are a relative political, even though you're into your third term, I mean, still, I guess, a sort of a neophyte politically. I mean, to speak to someone like myself who may have possibly thought of getting into politics at some point, or even if you haven't, I mean, what's it like? I mean, how hard is it, and how doable is it for the average person who would think maybe this is, you know, too hard or too time-consuming or too expensive?
I think that being a candidate or an elected official is not the only way to serve in the political process. It is hard. It is a sacrifice. If you do it right, you are truly a public servant, and you are giving some personal stuff up in order to be a part of the public sphere. But I believe that it's of critical importance that we find good people to take on our political leadership roles and to really, truly do it in a ethos of public service. And I think that should be clearer to people now than it ever has been. You know, no one likes to vote for flawed candidates and feel like they have to accept second best because that's the only option available to them. And the only way that you get better than that is you have people who run who are good candidates and do the things that make people feel hope and trust in government leadership.
It just seems like it's so hard now. And one of my responses to people who said, well, I can't vote if I don't like this candidate or that candidate. And I say, well, you know, Mother Teresa is not going to run for office. If you're going to run for office, you're going to be a person. And typically you're going to be someone who likes that arena, who perhaps is attracted to the power or whatever. I mean, at some level that becomes a motivating force, obviously, at people who are, you know, sort of career politicians. And so it just seems hard. You know, I mean, for the average person to be able to emotionally go there. So that's why I applaud you for being able to do that, because I mean, I don't think I could do it.
I don't know that the average person wants to go there and be the political leader. But for anyone to step up and run for office and be a political leader, you need a lot of average people who are with you.
Right.
And so any average person can get involved with campaigns or organizations that help elect the leadership that you believe in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and segue there into what I know was probably the core message of your video, which was the need to listen.
I feel like there are two main reasons why I want Democrats and liberals and progressives to think about listening right now. I don't think that we need to let go of our core values at all. But when you take a loss like we did in the presidential election, you have to spend enough time listening to be able to understand what was going on that you didn't anticipate and didn't understand. That's one reason. And related to that, I really believe that we as a party, as a Democratic Party, have become kind of inward focused and lost the ability to communicate across certain types of difference. The one that concerns me most is the urban-rural divide. And I think that this is a time where those of us who have the ability and privilege and energy to kind of listen to those who disagree with us, we need to do that. And I know not everyone can do that. I know there are people who are feeling so hurt and vulnerable right now that they can't kind of reach across difference. But people like me who have the privileges and opportunity to do that need to. And one of the reasons why I believe that's important is not just to understand, but that it's only through listening that we can actually bring people to our side. That lecturing and putting up cynical Facebook memes doesn't win anybody over. But reaching across difference, listening to someone sincerely enough and long enough that they're willing to stop and listen to me, gives me the chance to help them see why my perspective and my side holds out hope and opportunity for them.
They have to feel that they are being heard. And that means, I mean, and in my own progress in this, and I had to go do this kind of personal work to even be able to do this show and sit down and talk to people who disagree with me without having the fight or flight mechanism kick in and you start, you know, feeling anxious. It takes self-control, you know, and really takes a sort of a bit of being able to remove yourself from your emotional attachment.
That's right.
You go, all right, I'm going to listen to this person and really try to understand. And I mean, and listening takes energy.
That's right.
That's kind of one thing that we don't think about, because just because I'm hearing your words, but mainly my brain is mainly thinking about my next point. And that is what you have to untrain yourself, because mostly that's how we live our lives, I think, or how we, our thought lives, are like doing like a lot of that.
Our brains are wired for what psychologists call confirmation bias, which is your brain is wired to reinforce what it already believes, because what it already believes is what helps you navigate the world and keeps you safe. So it takes work to be able to stretch outside of that and be able to find connections to things that are unfamiliar and uncomfortable to you. But you can't have influence over the things that are outside of your sphere of influence until you're able to sit down and connect to them. And listening is the primary way that human beings connect to one another.
So for those of you out there listening, go find somebody that you disagree with and sit down and listen to them until they've said everything they can possibly say, until you've talked them out, and then and make sure they understand that you understand what they've said.
And if you feel like you can't do that, that you're just going to go and argue, then you're probably not ready yet.
That's right, exactly. Well, thank you. We're taking another short break here. This is Berkeley Grimble with I'll Grant You That. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. This is Berkeley Grimble here in the studio with Representative Greg Meyer. So, Greg, the thing that is of most concern to me then, and really depresses me, is the lack of a factual basis to have conversations. I mean, we are sort of living, as they call it, in a post-truth world or something. I mean, with everything we've all heard, you know, the stupid things on Facebook that get a million things, and they're all totally true, a million, you know, posts, and they're all untrue. And so how do we move forward if we can't arrive at a mutually accepted set of basic facts? I mean, it's fine to disagree with me on the policy of what we should do to fix a problem, but, I mean, if you don't even believe, as I've talked to people who don't believe that CO2 is a greenhouse gas, then we kind of can't even talk about that. So that's my deepest fear going forward.
I share your concern, Berkeley. It concerns me greatly that we've lost a common neutral media. Mm-hmm. I think that that is puts us at a real risk of the disuniting of the United States, because our civic society is built on having some neutral arbiters. The media have traditionally been one of the strongest of those neutral arbiters. And if we are at the point where we have media that is kind of has bifurcated along partisan lines, then I think we're in a really bad place. And that's one of the antidotes that I can imagine to that is having civic organizations that step in to play that role of helping people find common ground, listen to one another, and question facts and assumptions together. That has to happen at the ground level and in local communities. And that's very hard because, you know, those types of organizations don't have the same reach that a national media organization has. But in the face of kind of the bifurcation of the media, I think that the local opportunities to connect are increasingly important. And, you know, in Chapel Hill, we even have a little bit of a local bubble. And so mm-hmm. I think if you're someone in Chapel Hill who's trying to think about the role that you can play in finding common ground, you may have to think about organizations that you can join that have a regional basis that's larger than just Southern Orange County.
Go to Northern Orange County.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of people who live in my district in Northern Orange County and Northern Durham County who are conservative voters, Trump supporters, who also still want to see Orange County be a great place to live. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have access to those people, you don't have to go very far to find them.
No, but just to find some place where you can find common ground. I mean, Walter Cronkite will never come back, right? We are in this brave new world of media, and the polarization industrial complex is out there making us fearful and profiting upon our fear, I think, is what a lot, I mean, particularly on the right side, I think, more. But, I mean, you can argue either way. So I guess core takeaway is find somebody to talk to, you know, and we sit down, have some dinner or something, anything that we can start to do something to heal the rift.
And find ways to work alongside one another, and not even in political context. But, you know, if you can find an organization that is working, say, to address hunger among rural elderly residents in Orange County, then you have a project to work on with people around a shared interest, even if they don't think the same as you do politically.
Well, Craig, thank you so very much for coming in. I think it's been most enlightening. We do appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me,
Berkeley. This is Berkeley Grimble with I'll Grant You That.